Show.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Broadsword calling Denny Boy. Broadsword calling Denny Boy. Broadsword calling Denny Boy. Come in, Denny Boy. Over. Hey, and welcome to Friday on the Front Porch. Sorry about last night. I think I've mentioned in the past that I'm involved in a local school improvement committee, and a meeting was called, and I found out about it about 2 hours before showtime, and since it involves the well-being of my kids and a whole lot of other kids in this county, I felt like I needed to be there. So my apologies for that. But at least it wasn't a technical nightmare. And by all accounts, the phones are working, the internet is hot, and everything is working as one would expect it to be. So that's a good thing. So we've got 3 hours of cussing and discussing to close up this absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt weird-ass week. And I hope you will contribute your thoughts, your impressions, to the stories that you think matter the most this evening. Me, I've got a little handful of stuff. What? Oh, you know, there's funny and or sort of funny, and then there's not funny at all. Let's see. The fine, upstanding Christian values of the Palin clan are on display, including homophobic slurs from young Willow Palin. That is one nasty, mean-spirited looking little girl. Mm-mm-mm. You such a faggot. I'm sticking up for my family, she wrote on her Facebook page. Telling a critic, haha, you're so gay, Y-O-U-R. Not only do they not have any Christianity about them, they also have no grammar. But that's how that goes. And then there's, you know, apparently Bristol Palin drove a man to channel his inner Elvis. No, really, in Wisconsin, a 66-year-old man named Stephen N. Cowan did break out all Elvis. I'm going to get the Elvis gun. He got tired of seeing the incredibly never touched by talent Bristol Palin continue to advance in Dancing with the Stars because teabaggers cheat, because teabaggers are essentially dishonest. They will, you know, they'll steal anything that isn't nailed down. They'd steal a teabag. And they have been frauding the vote on Dancing with the Stars. I know this is a meaningless story, but my God, how pathetic and how low must you be to cheat up a dance contest? Jesus. So Stephen N. Cowan, 66 years old, got sick of seeing Bristol Palin advance in Dancing with the Stars. It was Monday night. He got up and started swearing, and he said, you know, the effing politics. The criminal complaint says Stephen was upset that a political figure's daughter was dancing on this particular show when Stephen did not think she was a good dancer. He went upstairs, he got a single-shot shotgun, he loaded the single-shot shotgun, and shot the TV. Incidentally, his wife did tell authorities that he had been drinking. That's the Elvis way out. go and get me a peanut butter and banana sandwich and bring me the gun, baby. I'm gonna shoot the TV. Jim noting early, Palin's daughter is enough to make anybody gay. Well, any guy, maybe. I don't think it's worth it, if I understand Jim correctly. Yeah, any guy. So that's kind of, you know, another one of those stupid little signs of the apocalypse. But there's more. Oh, there is so much more. Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden, who with the onset of bad weather isn't able to spend his free time out on the White House driveway polishing, waxing the Trans Am, has declared that the Transportation Security Administration's controversial new pat-down technique is a necessary policy. He was on Larry King Live, using Live and Larry King in the same... well, Larry King animatron, how about that? But he said, look, Larry, maybe because I spend so much time every morning dealing with the threat assessment that's out there and the fact that it's real, I understand people's frustration, but unless there's a new technology that comes along pretty quickly, I think it's a necessary policy. I think it will have the effect of saving lives and intercepting explosives. See, this is one of those moments when it turns out that you, the Horn family, we together, are actually a little bit smarter than the pants-wetting pants-wetting professional government people. I had an email just before showtime from our buddy Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. And he said, Bob, everybody's talking about the TSA searches lately. I figured since I was trained in these methods, I could throw in my two bits. To start, these searches are invasive, and yes, if they're done correctly, your junk will be violated. In Iraq, one of my unit's details was to search all the locals who worked on post. The locals had to have these invasive, violating searches done to them every single day, just so they could work. I agree that these searches in the airports need to stop, but since we are on the issue, we need to go ahead and ban our military from using these searches to violate civilians in the nations we're occupying. We were also trained to use a no-contact search that is equally effective to the invasive search if done correctly. There is no reason this method should not be used. And so I wrote back to Joe and I said, could you elaborate on the no-contact search? And he did, but I want to point out something that that Joe mentioned and just sort of got me going. We are outraged in this country about the TSA pat-downs, the gropes. There's yet another story out there today. A Chicago woman on a flight from St. Louis to Chicago had her artificial knees set off the metal detector. There was no body scanner for her to go through, and she was subjected to a grope. And she says that the TSA screener actually put her hands inside her panties. And I have no doubt that that is true. In any other circumstance, it would be a case of at least sexual abuse. So anyway, but the thing is, we are having kittens with crocheted tails over these things, when America generally has not given a tinker's damn about it being done to people overseas. Hell, we can't get the majority of Americans to say that drowning somebody who hasn't even been proven guilty of anything isn't okay. We can't get a majority of the American people to say that torture isn't all right. We've got people remarking proudly about torture. Jesus, God Almighty. Some of this stuff is just sickening. Sarah Palin, Mussolini, her advisor, among other things, has argued with the announcement of the verdict on Mr. Gailani, a whole bunch of not guilties coming back and one guilty. Many of the acquittals coming back because the evidence was gained with torture. Palin advisor, his name is Michael Goldfarb, said Gailani should never have been allowed to leave that CIA black site with a pulse. He wants summary murder in the name of America. The right wing is absolutely peeing themselves over the fact that, lo and behold, a prosecution was only partially successful. Why? Because in a court that's actually interested in administering justice, you can't allow things like evidence gained by torture to be admitted in court. But at any rate, the American people don't give a tinker's damn about what we do to brown people. We've been violating them for almost a decade now. And really, you know, not so much when it comes to worrying about it. Because, you know, it's them. But look, it's coming home to us. And now we're all upset. And the wing nuts are swearing that it's a conspiracy by that Kenyan Muslim. But anyway, I did find this very, very interesting because Joe Ray did write back and he said, in the no contact search, the person doing the search directs the person being searched to pull their clothes tight in certain ways. So someone wearing a skirt or a robe, dishdasha, Iraqi men wear them, would be directed to pull the clothing tight so that any hidden items would be seen through the clothing. Wow, that's almost sensible, isn't it? This is done for shirts and blouses, too, so instead of a person running a hand under breasts or such, the person being searched just has to pull their clothes tight. This may be embarrassing for some, but at least they're not having their body physically violated. Note, and for those of you who fly or travel and may run across this, pay attention to this. Note, on the invasive searches, the only part of the searcher's hand that should contact the inspected person's genitals is the back of the hand. If people are feeling a TSA agent's open palm on their genitals, then the TSA is doing the search the wrong way. But then again, that sick freak, the oxymoron, Flush Flimball, He says, touch my junk. Didn't he get... Oh, dear. This makes me worry even more about the latest Mrs. Limbaugh. Really? Has anybody seen her? Does anybody know the address for how you get a picture put on a milk carton? Because I'm beginning to think maybe... Yeah, I said that the other day. Limbaugh's out there. He wants to go and get groped at, but what a weirdo. But then again, we kind of knew that, didn't we? So sadly, I mean, who's not talking to whom that there's already an accepted procedure for doing this that's much less humiliating and doesn't involve a criminal trespass to the body, a battery. The word that hasn't been used yet but is appropriate to this is battery. The TSA is committing batteries. You know, most people have it in their head that battery involves, you know, slugging or slapping. No. Understand this now. The common law definition of battery, you know, coming down to us from merry oldie England, the common law definition of battery is an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. In other words, if I just bump into you in a crowded hallway or something, it's not a battery. But if I bump into you intending to insult or provoke you, and you know those kind of bumps, that is a battery. There is no way that getting a TSA screener's hand down your underwear in St. Louis is not insulting. And it is provocative. We're talking about battery. Again, this is another one of those moments where we need the hotshot lawyers whose rich as Croesus to just take on one of these cases and sue a TSA employee and sue the TSA and get an adjudication in court, because there is nothing that says, well, I don't know, that maybe there is. Maybe it's all just the Patriot Act and citizen, accept my groping, accept your groping in the name of national security. Amen. Maybe, I don't know. But I do find it interesting that there is another way, and I really appreciate Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. I appreciate him bringing that to the forefront, because maybe that can sort of, prompt a bit of a discussion if we can get it outside the little universe of the horn here. Jim's in rare form tonight. He says, TSA cops a feel. I remember when under the right circumstances it used to be fun. There's a joke about a couple of nuns, but I'm not going to tell it. David in South Carolina noting, and we make our own suffer, and we vote for people who promise to make it more difficult for us to have access to health care, cut off unemployment compensation to those most in need, and contemplate giving more money to the wealthy. Yes, we are a sick society. Indeed. Indeed. Just, and this, because we'll do the fun stuff before we get into the really horrifying stuff. You know, there's been a lot of talk about decision pants, the deciders' little piece of fiction. Saw a photograph today where someone had seen a copy of Decision Pants in the fiction section of a bookstore and opened it up and found a flyer that said, "Warning! The book you are about to read was written by a war criminal." Nice. Very nice. Love that kind of subversion. Doesn't break any laws. Doesn't deface anything. We're better than that. We're also funnier. Decision Pants is showing up in true crime sections, the fiction section. true crime. But there's another new book out. It came out on the 16th. That's 3 days ago. President Barack Obama published a children's book illustrated by Lauren Long called Of Thee I Sing, A Letter to My Daughters. And I saw this, and I immediately thought of something that was said, Wednesday night on the show? And that is, Barack Obama has yet to figure out that it doesn't matter what he does or says, the right wing will always be there to call him a communist over it. Or a Kenyan Muslim without a birth certificate. Or a socialist. Or some combination of all of the above. And lo and behold, a children's book by President Barack Obama called Of Thee I Sing, A Letter to My Daughters, is just the latest example of that. Noting the release of the book, well, let's talk about the book a minute. It is a book literally written to his daughters, Malia and Sasha. And it begins, this picture book, by Barack Obama saying, "Have I told you lately how wonderful you are?" That's a pretty good sentiment for a daddy to say to his little girls. But he includes in this book a list of people 13 Americans, quote, whose traits he sees in his own children. You know, it's the usual suspects. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Helen Keller, Billie Holiday. Georgia O'Keeffe, Neil Armstrong, and yes, Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull, the great Lakota chief. The text of the book says Sitting Bull was a medicine man who healed broken hearts and broken promises. It is fine that we are different. He spoke out and led his people against many policies of the United States government. He is most famous for his stunning victory in 1876 over Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer in the Battle of the Little Bighorn, or as the Lakota people called it, the Greasy Grass. So what is the headline over at Radio Rwanda's website? Obama praises Indian chief who killed U.S. general. Mm-hmm. Yep. Obama praises Indian chief who killed U.S. general. What's wrong with Obama praises Sitting Bull? It's shorter, and when headline writing, shorter is punchier. Brevity is the soul of wit, you know. Obama praises Indian chief who killed U.S. general. It's a good thing teabaggers are so damn stupid. Because, well, Helen Keller's on the list too, and she really was a socialist. Hardcore, no less. She was also a friend of this program's hero, Samuel Clemens. And fortunately for us, dull, pasty-faced, doughy white people probably don't know much about Billie Holiday either, or else they'd be another headline at Fox: Obama praises heroin addict. Yeah, because we all know that he should have chosen as a hero George Custer, you know, a slaughterer, a genocidalist, a madman, a man like John McCain, who graduated from a military academy almost at the very bottom of his class. Obama praises Indian chief who killed U.S. general. And the sad thing about the Stockholm Syndrome thing about this, the maddening, frustrating, tormenting, is that he still doesn't understand. He thinks that he has a political difference of opinion with the right wing, because Barack Obama doesn't want to pluck their eyeballs out and burn their bodies and scatter their entrails. But that's because Barack Obama is a civilized human being. The teabaggers are prejudiced, biased, bigoted, racist monsters, and they do want to pluck his eyeballs out. They really, really do. I saw a reference to a tweet that went around, oh, I guess it was last week or so. A wingnut had tweeted, "I hope there's a spare 7.62 millimeter round left laying around for Barack Obama's head." Which then engendered a bunch of tweets about how patriotic it would be to murder that one. Barack Obama has no idea. the depth of their hatred for him. And that, I suppose, is why it's so frustrating when you see headlines like this one. Obama to award Medal of Freedom to George H.W. Bush. I saw that one yesterday morning, and I just wasn't okay. President Obama will award the Presidential Medal of Freedom to one of his predecessors, George H.W. Bush. I'm being nice to them, and I just want to say that while we may have differences of opinion, we can disagree without being disagreeable. What does it take to get through to President Obama that he is not just in a situation where he has a disagreement with the other side? They are at war with him. And they want him dead. They want him dead. And he's not going to catch a break, whether it's from offering praise to Sitting Bull or any other thing that he may choose to do. If he patted children on the head, they would swear he was beating them. If he rescued a kitten from a burning tree, they would accuse him of having set the tree afire beforehand. Because they're teabaggers. Because they are dumber than dirt, and that combination of dumber than dirt with pig-eyed hateful makes for a really, really nasty member of the human race, alleged. You see? Jim noting, who would want to touch Flush Limbaugh's junk? An animated robot? I think robots have more self-respect than that. I doubt if Flush's wife is... don't even want to think about it. Cindy noting, where's Rush's wife? He accidentally ate her last time he was smoking dope. Thought she was a cookie. David in Tennessee noting that all this crap by John Kyle of Arizona and his cronies to stop the START treaty is proof positive that the ugly right will harm the nation so as to deny Barack Obama any obvious accomplishment. The treaty was settled business and all ready for the passage, but no, they cannot let the man have anything to point to as good for the country. Party first, country last. If you go back and you read ancient history, I'm not going to go into this too deeply, but you will find that there was a group of petty, venal little men who opposed Julius Caesar at every turn simply because he was Caesar. Because he was better than them, smarter than them. It was a brutal time, and the Romans thought nothing of slaughtering hundreds of thousands of people. I understand that. But the bony, B-O-N-I, the good people, the good men, that's what they called themselves. Others called them the optimates. They didn't care much for that. They didn't care what it did to the people around them as long as they made life difficult for Julius Caesar. We have, in the likes of John Kyle and Mitch McConnell and Rush Limbaugh, we have the 21st century equivalent of the bony. Opposition for opposition's sake. And it is frustrating as hell to realize that this country is being held hostage. Held hostage by a group of venal, petty little thugs who think only about their own aggrandizement and their own well-being. But I should note also that there's good news out there. Apparently, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is about to fall. Two Republicans, senators, Lisa Murkowski and John Ensign of Nevada, have confirmed that they will join the Democrats in voting to limit debate. In other words, invoke cloture on the defense authorization bill that contains the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now, because they are Republicans, and particularly in the case of John Ensign, a disgusting hypocrite, I'm not going to take them at their word. I will believe it when I have seen it done, when that little bit of freedom is finally afforded to men and women who have to have been forced to deny their basic human nature and their basic human rights in order to serve. But it is hopeful. It is hopeful. And it will be a great day if Don't Ask, Don't Tell can be, in fact, repealed. So there's at least we've got that much going for us. And then this, and I'll be going to the phone shortly, but this. You know, I told you a little bit, I guess it was last week, about Brian Fisher from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Last week when I was telling you about Brian Fisher had opined that grizzly bears needed to be rendered extinct because God wanted them dead. Interesting how fundies can tell us what God wants. You know, they have medication to stop those voices. And while that seemed a little bit lunatic and kind of ha-ha funny, his latest pronouncements are anything but. You know that this week, President Obama awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, emphasis on the word Congressional Medal of Honor, to Army Sergeant Salvatore Giunta, either Giunta or Giunta, no pronouncer. The sergeant is the first Medal of Honor recipient from the Afghanistan and Iraq wars to live to receive his medal. He was awarded the Medal of Honor for his service in the Korangal region of Afghanistan, the Korangal Valley. It was part of the transshipment route of arms and ammunition and people from Pakistan into Afghanistan. He braved heavy gunfire to pull a fellow soldier to cover. He rescued another one who was being dragged away by the enemy. Barack Obama, in awarding the Medal of Honor, the Congressional Medal of Honor, Congress has to pass it, said, "Repeatedly and without hesitation, you charged forward through extreme enemy fire, embodying the warrior ethos that says, 'I will never leave a fallen comrade.' Your actions disrupted a devastating ambush before it could claim more lives. Your courage prevented the capture of an American soldier and brought that soldier back to his family." The Sounds pretty heroic, doesn't it? Not to Brian Fisher of the American Family Association. Brian Fisher of the American Family Association said, so the question is this. When are we going to start awarding the Medal of Honor once again for soldiers who kill people and break things so our families can sleep safely at night? General George Patton once famously said, the object of war is not to die for your country, but to make the other guy die for his. Now, Fisher was wrong in this, but of course, since he's a godly man, he can't use Patton's actual quote, which was, the object of war is not to die for your country, to make the other bastard die for his. But Jesus wouldn't like that, so Brian Fisher had to clean up General Patton. And then he said this, we have feminized the Medal of Honor. We have feminized the Medal of Honor. I read that and I just stopped. He did. President Obama, please, guys, those of you sitting in the basement there of the NSA who I know listen to this program every night, get a memo to your boss. The right wing have just accused the President of the United States and the Congress of sissifying the Medal of Honor. This is disgusting. This is vomitous. This is the support the troops crowd, remember? Sergeant Junta, at great hazard to his own personal safety, literally took a member of the United States Army out of the hands of the enemy so that he could not be captured. And the right wing, the upstanding Christian, God-fearing right wing, says that that is feminizing. What happened? What happened to all their yellow ribbons support the troops magnets from China on the back of their SUVs and their little purple heart band-aids at the 2004 Republican National Convention? Well, it turns out, it was just the same hypocrisy that the right wing always engages in. We have feminized the Medal of Honor. When are we going to start awarding the Medal of Honor once again for soldiers who kill people and break things so our families can sleep safely at night? You know, we go to bed here every night, and I have yet to find any Afghan Mujahideen, haven't. And I don't think you have either. And I don't think the TSA is finding any Mujahideen inside the panties of a woman with replaced knees. You know, this is completely at odds with what he said about the grizzly bears. One human being is worth more than an infinite number of grizzly bears. But apparently, one human being saved from the hands of the enemy, well, that's feminizing. This is so sickening on so many levels that I don't know where... They only support the troops who come home in flag-draped coffins. Marty, you may be right, brother. You may be right. Feminizing. feminizing. So I thought I'd check in on some, because apparently Brian Fisher thinks that it's something new to award the Congressional Medal of Honor to a person who hazarded his life in order to save his comrades. So just knowing what I know of a little bit of West Virginia history, I checked out the Medal of Honor citation. It was awarded posthumously to Sergeant Herbert J. Thomas of the United States Marine Corps Reserve. 7 November 1943, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving with the 3rd Marines, 3rd Marine Division, in action against enemy Japanese forces during the battle at Coromokina River, Bougainville Island, Solomon Islands, November 7th, 1943. Although several of his men were struck by enemy bullets as he led his squad through dense jungle undergrowth in the face of severe hostile machine gun fire, Sergeant Thomas and his group fearlessly pressed forward into the center of the Japanese position and destroyed the crews of 2 machine guns by accurate rifle fire and grenades. Well, there's some killing people and breaking stuff. But wait, that's not why he won it. Discovering a 3rd gun more difficult to approach, Sergeant Thomas carefully placed his men closely around him in strategic positions from which they were to charge after he had thrown a grenade into the emplacement. He threw the grenade, but the grenade struck vines and bounced back into the midst of the group. And Sergeant Thomas deliberately flung himself on it to smother the explosion and sacrificed his own life for that of his comrades. Inspired by his selfless action, his men unhesitatingly charged the enemy machine gun and with fierce determination killed the crew and several other nearby defenders. The splendid initiative and extremely heroic conduct of Sergeant Thomas in carrying out his prompt decision with full knowledge of his fate reflect great credit upon himself and the United States Naval Service. He gallantly gave his life for his country. Oh, he was something, Sergeant Thomas. He grew up in South Charleston, West Virginia, and eventually went to Virginia Tech, which was then known as VPI. He was awarded a football scholarship to go there. He was a senior in 1940. He led his team in pass receptions and scoring, and led all players in college ball in Virginia in scoring. He's a member, posthumously, of the Virginia Tech Sports Hall of Fame. He left Virginia Tech 2 months short of graduation to enlist in the Army Air Corps, but he transferred to the Marines because so many of his friends had gone to the Marines as well. He did not get the Medal of Honor for taking out machine gun nests. He got the Medal of Honor for sacrificing himself for the betterment and the literal salvation of his comrades. And I suppose Brian Fisher, of the upstanding, moral, godly, decent American Family Association, would say that he too was feminized. Another feminized hillbilly was a young man by the name of Thomas J. Bennett. Thomas J. Bennett was a student at my alma mater, West Virginia University. His number came up. He was a conscientious objector, but his number came up. He had to leave school. He had been deeply involved in student government and had even founded the Campus Ecumenical Council when he was a freshman. We're talking about that flower of American male youth that we all like to think are. He was a Boy Scout. He was beloved in his community. But he didn't make grades in the fall 1967 semester because he was so busy being active on campus. He enlisted, volunteered as a conscientious objector for Vietnam. He was a conscientious objector willing to serve, which is a different designation from plain conscientious objector. He was trained as a field medic, and he refused to carry a weapon. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, Corporal Bennett distinguished himself while serving as a platoon medical aidman with the 2nd Platoon Company B during a recon in force mission. On 9 February, the platoon was 1969. The platoon was moving to assist the 1st Platoon of Company D, which had run into a North Vietnamese ambush when it became heavily engaged by the intense small arms, automatic weapons, mortar, and rocket fire from a well-fortified and numerically superior enemy unit. In the initial barrage of fire, 3 of the point members of the platoon fell wounded. Corporal Bennett, with complete disregard for his safety, ran through the heavy fire to his fallen comrades, administered life-saving first aid under fire, and then made repeated trips carrying the wounded men to positions of relative safety from which they would be medically evacuated from the battle position. Corporal Bennett repeatedly braved the intense enemy fire, moving across open areas to give aid and comfort to his wounded comrades. He valiantly exposed himself to the heavy fire in order to retrieve the bodies of several fallen personnel. Throughout the night and the following day, Corporal Bennett moved from position to position, treating and comforting the several personnel who had suffered shrapnel and gunshot wounds. On 11 February, Company B again moved in an assault on the well-fortified enemy positions and became heavily engaged with the numerically superior enemy force. 5 members of the company fell wounded in the initial assault. Corporal Bennett ran to their aid without regard to the heavy fire. He treated 1 wounded comrade and began running toward another seriously wounded man. Although the wounded man was located forward of the company position, covered by heavy enemy grazing fire, and Corporal Bennett was warned that it was impossible to reach the position, he leaped forward with complete disregard for his safety to save his comrade's life. In attempting to save his fellow soldier, he was mortally wounded. Corporal Bennett's undaunted concern for his comrades at the cost of his life above and beyond the call of duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of the military service and reflect great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army. He was feminized, I suppose, Brian Fisher would say, because he wasn't busy killing people and breaking things, merely saving American lives. The remarks of Brian Fisher, who, having made them, you can be almost dead certain, never served in the United States military. Should be torn limb from limb by veterans who have. He should be shredded into tiny pieces by the people whom he insulted. There are some things that are unpardonable, and Brian Fisher's words are unpardonable. Yeah, Jude asking, can you repeat what he said? So the question is this, when are we going to start awarding the Medal of Honor once again for soldiers who kill people and break things so our families can sleep safely at night? We have feminized the Medal of Honor. What about the families who sleep safely at night with the people who were saved by the likes of Sergeant Junta, Corporal Bennett, Sergeant Thomas? What about them? You yellow belly, you Christian Fisher, What about them? Sweet Jesus. Mora writes in. This is the Medal of Honor citation for the father of a friend of mine. Corporal, U.S. Army Medical Detachment, 48th Armored Infantry Battalion, 7th Armored Division, Alamert, Germany, 5 April 1945. He was an aide man with the 1st Platoon of Company C during an attack on the town of Alamert, Germany. The platoon, committed in a flanking maneuver, had advanced down a small open valley overlooked by wooded slopes, hiding enemy machine guns and tanks, when the attack was stopped by murderous fire that inflicted heavy casualties in the American ranks. Ordered to withdraw, Corporal Kelly reached safety with uninjured remnants of the unit, but on realizing the extent of casualties suffered by the platoon, voluntarily retraced his steps and began evacuating his comrades under direct machine gun fire. He was forced to crawl, dragging the injured behind him for most of the 300 yards, separating the exposed area from a place of comparative safety. Two other volunteers who attempted to negotiate the hazardous route with him were mortally wounded, but he kept on with his Herculean task after dressing their wounds and carrying them to friendly hands. In all, he made 10 separate trips through the brutal fire, each time bringing out a man from the death trap. 7 more casualties who were able to crawl by themselves, he guided and encouraged in escaping from the hail of fire. After he had completed his heroic self-imposed task and was near collapse from fatigue, he refused to leave his platoon until the attack had been resumed and the objective taken. Corporal Kelly's gallantry and intrepidity in the face of seemingly certain death saved the lives of many of his fellow soldiers and was an example of bravery under fire. Nothing there about him killing anyone or breaking anything. Merely saving lives. Another feminized winner of the Medal of Honor, according to Brian Fisher. What a sick, sick, psychopathic bastard he is. We now only award the Medal of Honor for preventing casualties, not for inflicting them. This is the right wing. This is the party that says they support the troops. This is the party that says they'll keep America safe. This is the party that spits on the heroism of the winners of the Congressional Medal of Honor. And by the way, Brian Fisher isn't just some dick. Brian Fisher can be seen at any number of right-wing claverns. Social conservative movements love to invite him to speak. He spoke this past fall at the Value Voters Summit alongside Mitt Romney and Jim DeMint. Great patriots, they. Mitt Romney. Willard Romney! It would be interesting to get hold of Jim DeMint's office and ask him if he supports and defends and approves of the words of Brian Fisher to the extent that Medal of Honor winners who have been cited only for the gallantry they displayed in saving their comrades' lives, if he, Senator DeMint, also feels that those award winners are feminized. The misogyny of even using that word is stunning. Because you see, it indicates feminized? Oh, so anything feminine is by definition substandard or unacceptable or improper? I guess. But then again, this is a guy who follows a book that says women should shut the hell up in church and keep their hair tied up in knots and not say anything till they get home, and if they have any questions, to ask their husband. And that the women are to submit to their husbands and understand that they are second class. Stunning, isn't it? So that's the first hour of the program. We're going to go to the phones right after our top of the hour break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to the horn. You know the email address, right? Bob Kincaid, bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is the horn.
What can you see from your window? I can't see anything from mine. Flags on the side of the highway and scripture on grocery store signs. Maybe 18 too early, maybe 30 or 40 years too. You get your chance to make peace with the man, or is sent down his angels. Mamas and grandmamas love you, 'cause that's all.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
You know what it boils down to? Brian Fisher of the American Family Association is no different from Fred Phelps. They are the same monster. They both spit on the blood, bone, and sinew of sacrifice. Regardless of what you think of the war, someone who does what Sergeant Junta did has displayed heroism in the extreme. Jack from Shreveport wrote in and said, did the American Family Association right-winger also imply that no woman could ever deserve the Congressional Medal of Honor? Why, yes, Jack, I think he did. Or at the very least, that the only way a woman could ever win the Congressional Medal of Honor would be if she displayed sufficiently masculine traits. Sick bastard. Ron in Raleigh wrote, Bob, I just heard that the Taliban are sailing their aircraft carrier with their assault aircraft toward the U.S. Oh, wait. They don't have either of those things. I sleep just fine, damn it. But you see, Brian Fisher does all of this from behind the walls and the locks of the American Family Association. He would never dare say that to a real veteran. Elaine writing in. She said, thought you might want to see this regarding the rights, respect for the military. Glenn Beck has called the organization Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Association, IAVA. He's called them communists. And asserted that, of course, IAVA is funded by none other than George Soros. Goes on and on and on. But I am going to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
Oh, it's a fun week, I tell you. You know how that goes.
How you think some of those good East Tennessee boys who've been to Iraq and Afghanistan would feel about Brian Fisher telling them they were feminized?
Well, what I was thinking was, while I was sitting here thinking while you were talking about it, I was thinking probably about probably a couple of the famous people, you know, everybody would know. There was this fella, I believe he was an Okie, some fella named Audie Murphy. Now, as I remember, Mr. Murphy, during his combat that earned him his medal, called in an airstrike on his own position. Now, that shows the man was suicidal. You know, it's...
Well, and then there's another old fella who was actually a conscientious objector.
Uh-huh.
Came from your neck of the woods.
Some fella named Alvin York.
Alvin Colum York.
You know, and he
big old sissy.
He didn't kill all them people. He captured a whole hell of a lot of them.
He captured more than he killed.
Oh, yeah. And like I say, he was a conscientious objector. He didn't want to kill. The way they essentially talked him into war was essentially telling him, you're killing to prevent other people from dying. But, you know,
And, you know, by 1933, he had looked back on it and he said, I did what I did, but I don't think we made any difference. Things don't appear to be any better than they were.
Okay. Hey, let's get on to something else, if you don't mind, just for a little
sure.
bit. Okay, two things. Well, quick things. One is... about the, we want to talk about fair and balance and how the same, how how MSNBC is the exact same as the boys over at Fox Pack. Well, I noticed this week that Mr. Matthews is gone, and have you seen who's been his substitute this week?
No.
Some fellow named Michael
Smirkanish. Oh, for pity's sake.
Now, wait a minute. Now, think of this now. When is, I'm going to love it sometime when they say they're the same. Go, okay, when is Tom Hartman sit in for Glenn Beck? You know, when Mike Malloy set in for the big giant head.
Oh, God, that 70 to 103 demographic that watches Fox, their little noggins would just explode.
Well, let's put it this way. Nitroglycerin would go up, and give me some more, please. I need the pills.
Clear.
One thing about talking about the big giant head. Somebody was talking the other week. Somebody said he's the most popular man on cable TV. One of the fools at work said this, and I said, yeah. I said, sometimes look at the cable listings. Most every night he's beaten by somebody called SpongeBob SquarePants. Head to head. You know, just
big yellow head versus, yeah.
That's one of those little facts to throw at people when they say something like that. You just go, you know. Good thing and a bad thing. We gotta praise a man when he does something good.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you the link. If anybody wants to go over to Crooks and Liars or different places, go to Comedy Central and watch the first 20 minutes of Jon Stewart last night.
Oh, you mean the Glenn Beck Manchurian Lunatic takedown?
Yeah. That was the best I think I've seen in forever. You know what I mean? That, he had that down just so pat. And I was the only one that bugged me was he had the thing where he claimed Glenn was the Manchurian candidate, and I'm just sitting there going, No. Lonesome Roseanne's a Manchurian candidate. He got the names mixed up. The person he should be talking about is some fellow named Rupert, you know, President Toppentine. Who sits there, you know, when you hear Glenn Beck give all these descriptions, it's like, you know what, that fits Rupert to a T. Yeah, I mean, especially when they sit there and you know, we're talking about, he has a media network that supports protests, and then they show all the Fox News Tea parties, because remember that's what they were originally. That's what they were listed. They were Fox News tea parties. But now I'm going to give the one my negative for Mr. Stewart. I guess I call it a rally that we should always. Anytime he wants the same thing that Mr. Stewart comes out, he should always be Mr. Stewart. You know your thing about civility. Rush goes first. You know, we're tired of turning our cheek. We've got to slap back.
Yeah, that's a very important point, Luke, because we didn't start this.
Yeah.
What evidence is there to suggest that they're going to be civil if we start?
It's like I say, you know, if you want to claim that, that's fine. That's his right. He can claim it. But just remind him, you know, Rush goes first. Either him or Beck or the life support system for the haircut. You know, let's hear them do it for a while. Just, you know, since we've been the ones who've always had to turn cheek. Remember, that was the thing during the 90s. You know, oh, yeah, we have to play nice. Every time we play nice, it's like, say, that's when you got stabbed in the back. You know, so we've been through that, and we're kind of over all that, you know. The thing about Mr. Soros, I think what we're going to see in the next couple of years, I think, like I say, with this statement he made the other day, is like say he ain't gonna be giving the money to the DNC or whatever anymore. I think it's like say he's gonna start funding all the independent, I guess you'd call it third party. I guess more independent. Let's put it that way. Groups. He ain't gonna funnel it through the DNC anymore because the DNC kind of just sat on their hands. I mean, like we talked about last week or week before. You know, let's get that damn 50-state strategy going again. Let's get those kids out there on the Facebook and on the Twitter and whatever. You know, that should never have stopped. It's like right after the election, all of a sudden, they just kind of lost interest in that. No! I mean, this next 2 years, they ought to be out there beating the bushes, getting the kids up and about it and going, you know, here's what they're doing. You know, it's like this thing right now with the unemployment. It's like, you know, amazingly enough, they want to give that $700 billion to billionaires, but they can't find $12 billion to give to the unemployed. Well, you know, it's just sort of like, you know, guys, $12 billion. You're gonna stiff these people for $12 billion, but you're gonna dig out and cut out $700 billion out of the money so you can give it to the rich fat cats. You know, it's like, oh, some of this stuff just wears it out. And like you said, the thing about Ensign and Murkowski. Well, first of all, Murkowski, I'm just wondering if she's just doing this just to tweak Caribou Barbie. Cause that's
whatever reason she has.
Yeah.
I'm glad she's doing it, assuming that she does. But see, I mean, I'm not one of those silly liberals who thinks that snakes stop being snakes.
Yeah. She's gonna have to do some votes, and then we'll see about it. You know. But, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things. I think that's going to be something fun for the next couple of years leading up to 2012, is I think the thorn in Caribou Barbie's side is going to be Senator Murkowski. Because, as you can tell, there's not a whole lot of love between them two.
No. And, frankly, anything that makes Caribou Barbie's life more miserable, I hate to say it because it betrays me as such a shallow person, but I'm for it.
Well, you know, it's
I mean, Jesus, funny. Luke, they're even gaming the system and cheating on Dancing with the Stars.
I saw that. I was sitting there going, you know, I've never even really watched it, just occasionally. If I'm
me neither.
But you know what? I'm almost going to see whenever their next time is, and they have one of their votes. I may actually, for this championship, I may actually have to pick up the phone and spend a dollar or two. Just make me feel good about it. I may not change anything, but I may do it just to, you know.
Well, I'm told by people who do watch it, among other things, our good friend Dennis in Kentucky does, says he fancies he was a decent dancer in his youth, and so he watches, and he says it's just ruined for him.
Well, it's one of those things that apparently was the girl, the singer that just got booted off Brandy, that her and her partner had like a perfect score, and she got voted off to make space for the spawn of the Barbie. Yeah.
And what was, you know, okay, catty moment. What was that Queen of the Damned outfit that she was wearing? I mean, I saw the photos and just, what? But
maybe mother has a part of the closet we're not supposed to know about, you know?
I know. Whether you're looking at Willow or at Bristol, they both have these looks on their faces of just pure evil.
Well, sometimes when you look at them, you know, you're just sitting there going, these are children who are shell-shocked. They probably have no emotional pattern because they have seen no emotional pattern. I mean, isn't it amazing here you have Caribou Barbie, who every step of the way, you know, has cried, you can't use my children. You can't put, you know, can't. You know, when the I can't think of his name now, the writer moved up next to them. Just went ballistic because he was going to write a story about them. And here she is, essentially, for the last 2-3 years, has used them as props at every opportunity. You know, most people forget, you know, that she got investigated because she was flying the kids all over to be with her at certain events, even though the kids had nothing to do with them. You know, and the state was paying the freight to move those kids around to different events, so Mama could have them up there on the stage with her for photo ops. I mean, it wasn't anything about kids, you know, anything about children or anything like that. She was having them moved, even though they were not with her. She was having them brought there so they could be with her for photo ops. But you know, she doesn't want anybody to exploit her children. You know,
right.
But like I say, the thing now, you know, I say 2012 has begun. We have to start already. You know what I mean? And we should. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, we got to start getting our candidates lined up. You know, start. And like I say, every step of the way, when these jackasses and the Republicans and the teabaggers just went in, we got to keep every time one of them does something like, you know, like what was the one who wanted his health care now, you know.
Oh, I just loved him.
I mean, you know, that's something we got to start.
But the best part of the teabagger who wanted his health care, Luke, was that when he was told he couldn't have it for 30 days, he said, well, isn't there some sort of government plan I can buy into? You mean like the public option?
The one you railed against for the last year? And then somebody was covered it, and I think it was Overman, and ran, showing him at 2 or 3 different events where he just sit there and just said it was evil to have that option.
And your fellow Tennessean, our buddy David, just pointed out that Lisa Murkowski is would be well advised to watch her back. She's noted for walking from place to place in D.C. Be real careful in the crosswalks and no small aircraft, Senator.
You know, it's one of those things.
And don't get anywhere near a snow machine.
Oh, like I say, you got to remember. Now, we also have the couple of the turncoat, you know, the Beyond Blue Dog Democrats down here, you know, on this thing the other day where they had the vote that one of the Democrats who voted against it was from here.
Oh.
Mr. Cooper. Old Jim Cooper. Who, like I say, you poke a Democrat down here and a Republican bleeds out.
Yeah, right. I mean, how he survived the election, well, he must be really Republican.
Well, it's one of those things, that, you know.
Was his opponent more liberal than him?
I have no idea. He's over more towards the middle of the state. David might be able to tell you more about that. But the one, like I said, the one in my area is John Duncan, Jimmy Duncan. John Duncan Jr., excuse me, who inherited the post from his father. You know, I've never known not having a Duncan for a representative. And I'm 52.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, his daddy was there for years, for 35 something years. And then when he retired, son took over the job. But, you know, I'm just sitting around just waiting to see when the teabaggers show up to tell him he ain't Republican enough for them. Cause he is one of the ones that I'll give him credit for this. He voted against the Iraq War. You know, but I'm just waiting to see, to see some of these things, to watch when the teabaggers show up to say he ain't Republican enough for us. We got to get somebody in here who.
And they will.
You know. One quick thing before I go. I'm going to get off here. How did you enjoy the picture of the statue?
Oh.
General?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good statue, man. It looks like it's about to stand up and talk to you. I mean, it's lifelike looking, you know, it really is.
Oh, it mind blowing, yeah.
But how are the Mountaineers doing?
I'm in a terrible place.
Yeah.
Just kind
of praying to lose enough to get rid of the coach.
Yeah.
I know. Well, like I say, we got to win out. So this weekend we got Vanderbilt, so that's okay. Next weekend the Kentucky could be the good game. We'll just have to wait and see.
Well, you know. Yeah. I think you've got a better future in front of y'all than we do in front of us, Luke.
I know.
Oh, but no, it's a tough day in Knoxville, though. What with Coach Pearl?
Well, you know, he'll manage through that. The problem is that, of course, some of the sports talkers are already packing his bags for him. You know, it's one of those things. He screwed up, but like I say, he didn't kill nobody. He didn't take no money. You know, I mean,
I know.
You know,
I know.
But
an 8-game sit out inside SEC play?
I know.
It's going to be tough.
Well, the thing is, that's just the SEC. The NCAA hasn't even said anything yet.
Right.
So we're still waiting on that. But
they're kind of busy. They all may be kind of preoccupied with Cam Newton right now.
But you got to remember around here, this is the same crowd down here that in 99 after the national championship year, that's the first year they started clamoring for Fulmer's head because he didn't win back-to-back national championship.
Wonder if they'll do that down in Tuscaloosa.
Well, I tell you what, the one though I think is going to be more interesting is to see what's going to happen down in beautiful Florida land, because
Gainesville.
Because apparently
Pope Urban's going to have a baby.
Well, he's lost the golden touch apparently.
No, he lost Tebow.
I know. So we'll see how that works out.
Luke, you have yourself a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Yeah, have a good weekend.
All right, bye now.
What's scheduled for next week?
Monday, right. Tuesday, Wednesday at the very least.
Okay, that's fine. All right, then you have a good weekend, a good holiday if I don't talk to you before then.
All right, take care, Luke.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
And thanks to Luke for reminding me. Yeah, everything's normal. Normal, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then everybody, I hope, will have a happy Thanksgiving. Keeping things rolling, let's cruise along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Do you have to see John Stewart thing on George Soros?
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry, that kind of just made me laugh. Wow. I mean, because I don't watch Glenn Beck, and I'm still thinking, is that for real? Does he have like the chalkboard, and is he really that animated?
Oh, yeah. Everything that John Stewart did was a mock-up, a send-up of stuff that Beck does. I love the thing I loved best about that bit, Sandra, was the way that they selectively clipped Glenn Beck's words. I mean, listen to this. This is wonderful. Oh, wait, I cued it to the wrong place. But you know, all that footage of him. You know, I'm crazy. I'm a madman. I'm God.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No. I mean, it's just funny. I just, yeah, like I said, I can't even bother looking at it because he just looks too weird to me, and the whole Mormon thing, I have to say, is just really bizarre. So I never really can't even look at it. But wow, he's out there, and that's like one of their big ratings getters, right? At Radio Rwanda.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. And you know what? It was just after the Wednesday show when I got an email from Texas Betsy. It was a picture of a Lego Tower of Babel. And so I'm sure that there will now be what we need is a Lego European Union Parliament building, and then maybe Glenn Beck can do a show about Lego being communist.
No, that whole business we were talking about was also just way up north. I mean, I can't believe, because I hate that Rabbi Lappin. He's a foul person. I don't know how much you know about him.
Oh, I do. Well, at least I read up on him. He is, yeah, he's a sick bastard.
You know, with his, you know, it's just, not only is his sort of free enterprise mentality, but his views on women is what really just gives me the heebies. Yeah, nasty. I used to listen to him when he was on that horrible Michael Medved show.
Ooh.
And they're just together. It was this really frightening and foul kind of misogyny, you know, both of them. I mean, that Medved character is like, I'm sure he's closeted, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the deal with him. But Lappin, he's just a misogynist. Oh, God.
Well, he's a flim-flam man, too.
Yeah, no.
Now, he was all tied up in the whole Jack Abramoff thing.
Right, that's right. No, I knew it was something, you know, deeply corrupt about that guy. Yeah. Anyway, hey, another bit of good news is, you were talking about the don't ask, don't tell, but, you know, Wyden put a hold on that internet censorship bill. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, which is really interesting. You know, he put a hold on, I think it's the Combating Online Infringement and Counterfeit Act, which would essentially give the U.S. the same power as what China has now to sort of just shut down websites, you know, if they deem it to be breaking, of all things, copyright infringement. So it was a direct sort of fascist connection again between government.
So are we just on the verge of throwing out the whole fair use doctrine?
Yeah, no, it's interesting, yeah, exactly, but he put a hold on it for now, and it's a good chance that it, you know, it may not see the light of day, which is interesting because I'm expecting this next Congress to go full tilt on net neutrality and...
yeah, because, frankly, the one place where the liberal progressive message is getting out is on the Internet. And I'm not just talking about us. I'm talking about, you know, Koss and Democratic Underground and all the great liberal bloggers, you know, all the folks over at Crooks and Liars, the good work that's being done by the people at Think Progress.
Oh, yeah, no, but there's also a fair amount of pushback on the actual Internet proper. I mean, even Google, who, you know, they're kind of suspect, but there'll be a huge, big interest fighting against each other over this because they stand to lose a lot if things aren't left open. You see, there's big corporations that stand to lose, too. It's not just us that will lose. So I see, you know, this sort of Combating Online Infringement and Counterfeit Act failing or faltering as really good news if we're looking for that on this lovely Friday.
Well, we'll take all we can get.
But beyond that, you know, of course, it's not too good. And I actually was quite disturbed by some of the international news I heard. Did you hear about the 2,000 fetuses they found in a temple in Thailand?
No.
Yeah, let me just break this down. Okay, first of all, I've been to Thailand. I spent many weeks there. Lovely place. They have a huge sex industry. You know,
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, funny enough, abortion is straight up illegal in Thailand. Okay.
That I did not know.
Exactly. So it's sort of like, huh?
So they've got a, so they've got what the right wing would call a culture of life.
Right. And all of a sudden now, it's like, hello. They just did this huge discovery of 2,000 fetuses bagged up because someone started smelling something foul from this temple in Bangkok. And, yeah, and they're trying to round up the abortionists and whatnot. Maybe they're looking for the women. But I was just sort of, you know, I'm just kind of like, well, see, that's what happens when you try to legislate those sort of things. And I have to say I was taken aback. You know, all this time that I spent in Thailand just looking at the sex trade, I thought, gee, I really had no idea that you couldn't get an abortion. That was new to me, too.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so that one kind of threw me. And the other one that threw me, which is very interesting, is that, oh, looky-see, the microcredit industry is about to have their own subprime in India.
No, it's the Grameen Bank folks and stuff? Or
well, no, yeah, this is it's the same kind of principle, but this is backed by investors like Warren Buffett. Don't get it mixed up, Bob. So the people in India, various politicians have told their constituents to stop paying the loans back. So the whole shit's about to collapse.
Oh, my God.
Because, the banks are using all kinds of coercive means to get these poor people to pay back the loans, and they can't do it. Now they're not paying en masse. I mean en masse, like only 10% of people are paying, Bob. This is so interesting. So, I don't mean to get on the phone and say, great, don't pay your debts. Don't get me wrong. But when I see this shit going on, then I see that they just issued an IPO recently where millions upon millions of profits being made, and Warren Buffett is a party to it. And the people that are like, oh, no, hell no, and they're not paying, which is like, well, that's one way of fighting.
So this is just one big, poor, great big the bunch of poor folks saying, eat it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what seems to be going on in India, which is, I'm thinking, because it was a big story in the New York Times. And so when you trace, it's not like Grameen where there seems to be some altruism involved with it. This seems to be straight up for-profit, like predatory lending that we have here.
Yeah, the whole Bill Hicks, that poor people lending, that's a good dollar kind of.
Right, but they seem to, but because they're sort of brutalizing folks to get them to pay back the $2,000 or $1,000, that is might as well be $1 million. People are fighting back by not paying, and the Indian government is starting to get worried because guess how much exposure the banks have? Brace yourself. Like, you know, billions. Billions.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And, you know, I shouldn't say it, but it makes me smile. You know, I'm like, oh, well. And
isn't that do-it-yourself jubilee?
Well, that's kind of, yeah, you know, like we had mentioned before, and, you know, the fact that you when you start looking at this, you see people like Warren Buffett, you're like, ew, you know, it's just that these people who are the richest in the world, they are for a reason, and the reason is exploitation of all the other people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stop putting these people on pedestals, they're all vulture predators trying to say that their riches are gained through their own hard work, fuck that. Sorry.
No, don't apologize.
I'm done with it. And these stories are great because you get to sort of see, looky here. And, you know, the Indian government is freaking out on the poor.
Yeah, because Warren Buffett and the rest of that crowd, they don't have enough crackdown to be able to break the knees of every poor person in India because there's a lot of poor people in India.
Well, that's the thing. And this is what it says. It says some of the anger appears to have been fueled by recent initial public offerings of shares in SKS Microfinance, India's largest for-profit micro-lender, backed by famous investors like George Soros and Buffett. So it's like, and it's other co-founder of Sun Microsystems. Okay?
Yeah.
So we were talking about George Soros, but yeah, you know, he's deep in it.
Well, and that's something that David was telling me the other night, that as compared to like Rupert Murdoch, you know, Murdoch's wealth is all tied up in his assets. whereas Soros's wealth is not tied up. It's far more liquid, so he can move it around and do stuff with it.
Well, that's what I say about Soros is it's not so dubious, because any place where you can see, mass misery, it leads back to him on some levels, especially if you look at, like, Poland and Eastern Europe after the fall of the Soviet Union. Who was there? Soros was there, capitalizing on the rapid marketization of, those command economies. So all that money was made really quickly. He cashed in, and when it all collapsed, he was out.
Well, it's good to be out when the collapse comes.
Well, anyway, it's just sort of interesting because you look at the microfinancing, and it's like, wow, you see these huge, big time investors involved in it, and you're just like, it's so disgusting. It's totally disgusting. Anyway. So, yeah, those two stories really kind of did my head in. And Ireland is rapidly. That's a sad situation, too.
It is. It's a financial potato famine in the making over there, isn't it?
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, I'm just sort of thinking, I keep thinking, oh, God, don't accept the IMF, because once they do that, they've lost control of the purse strings. They could just sort of pull out of the euro and say, F you. They'd be in big trouble, but they're going to be in really big trouble if they keep the creditors whole, which is what the IMF will do for them, right?
Well, yes.
Mm.
There was something. What was the name? What was the name of that? I wanted to ask you the next time we talked. MERS, was that the name of it?
The electronic title business. Yeah.
I ran across something, and I'm trying to bring it up right now, because I immediately thought of you when I saw it. Apparently, MERS has no employees.
Well, yeah, that's the other whole joke about it.
I mean, this thing reads like something from this is a deposition excerpt with William C. Hultman, the secretary and treasurer of MERS Corp. Okay, and just for just to sort of refresh people's recollection, this is the outfit that has dummied up the title and land to literally millions upon millions of mortgages in this country. And so I guess there was a lawsuit at some point, and he was deposed. And no, this reads like something out of Abbott and Costello. Check this out. Question. Does MERS have any salaried employees? Answer, no. Does MERS have any employees? Did they ever have any? I couldn't hear you. Does MERS have any employees currently? No. In the last 5 years, has MERS had any employees? No. To whom do the officers of MERS report? The board of directors. To your knowledge, has Mr. Hallinan ever reported to the board? He would have reported through me if there was something to report. So if I understand your answer, at least the MERS officers reflected on Hultman Exhibit 4, if they had something to report, would report to you even though you're not an employee of MERS. Is that correct? Object to the form of the question. That's correct. And in what capacity would they report to you? As a corporate officer. I'm the secretary. As a corporate officer of what? Of MERS. So you're the secretary of MERS but are not an employee of MERS. Correct. How many assistant secretaries have you appointed pursuant to the April 9th, 1998 resolution? How many assistant secretaries of MERS have you appointed? I don't know that number. Approximately? I wouldn't even begin to be able to tell you right now. Is it in the thousands? Yes. Have you been doing this all around the country, in every state in the country? Yes. And all of these officers, I understand, are unpaid officers of MERS? Yes. And there's no live person who's an employee of MERS that they report to. Is that correct? Who's an employee? There are no employees of MERS. How's that for just doing your head in?
I know, it's incredible. I mean, that was the whole thing about that electronic whatever it was, is that it was just nebulous, and what is it really? And the fact that it's holding some 60 million more, something really...
Well, how can something that doesn't have any employees hold anything?
Well, that's the thing. And, I don't really want to... can't even imagine what the next Congress is going to... how it's going to contort itself to... make this foreclosure.
Well, they've got They've got favors to get busy on, don't they, Sandra?
Well, this other bill that we thought that was coming back, apparently that's dead. That's the latest that I can tell.
Yeah, there was actually a vote on a veto override, wasn't there?
Yeah, and it sort of has put that version of it away. But trust me, I think something else is coming up because the banks are, you know, this word exposure is just appropriate for all this, but the banks' exposure is even greater on this other end than it was from the front end of this fraud. So I'm anxious to see what President Not Sure is, you know, how he's going to protect his friends on this one. You know? Oh, did you, that thing you sent me, you talked about that today, didn't you? The Medal of, I mean, that whole idea that he is giving that war criminal a medal, and then he had said something nice about him, too, all that just made me feel creepy.
Yeah, well, it didn't make me feel particularly good, Sandra. Is there no end? I mean, who told him, Barack, I got a great idea. What do you say we give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to George H.W. Bush while you're president? What? And Obama just, that would be a great idea. Granted, you know, these medals are given in a class. But here's one of your buddies. Also included in the Presidential Medal of Freedom list for the George H.W. Bush recipient class, Warren Buffett, John Lewis, Angela Merkel, and basketball great Bill Russell. Gene Kennedy Smith, Maya Angelou, Stan Musial, John Sweeney, Sylvia Mendez, and Yo-Yo Ma, and Jasper Johns.
Wait, they're giving it to Angela Merkel?
Yep.
The German chancellor?
Yeah, with the shoulder rub.
Well, that's so weird. Is she going to be just there?
If I was Angela Merkel, I would say I'm going to wait till the next class until it doesn't have a bush in it because I don't want another back rub.
Not only that, but she's seen about a lot on her plate. That lady, I don't know if she got time to be flying out here for that bullshit. Since Germany runs Europe, let's be honest and say what's really going on, right? So she's busy. But listen, it's too much. It's way too much for me now because now I was looking at, you know that writer Eugene Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's writing about, you know, oh, please, 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 Obama, can you get us by? I mean, it's just kind of almost pathetic to kind of read, because let me just read this one little bit he writes. The ability of President Obama to accomplish important change through these powers, he's talking about, you know, the sort of executive order and bully pulpit, stuff like that. But he's quoting Podesta, and he said, President Bush, for example, faced a divided Congress throughout most of his term in office, yet few can doubt his ability to craft a unique and deeply conservative agenda using every aspect of the policymaking apparatus at his disposal. Crickets, crickets. It's like, okay, what, now you're pulling out Bush's performance as something for Obama to emulate? Is that how desperate we are now?
And
then he ends by talking about, well, you know, it's important to note that Bush's book is titled Decision Points, not Talking Points or Scoring Political Points.
Ooh.
Sorry, that shit is funny. But just think about what they're saying here. They're saying the worst president in the history of the world is more effective than this motherfucker right here. I'm sorry. That's what it looks like they're saying to me.
It is what they're saying.
And so... that's not good.
Not what? I know. But when you look at Barack Obama and you look at what the Congress couldn't get done in the last 2 years, and then you look at the crap that got rammed through in the Bush administration, that's kind of what it looks like, isn't it?
Well, and I'll top it off. I'll give you this little final bit of information to sort of round out this part of the discussion, Dems vow to push filibuster reform. Now they're working real hard. Please explain to me what's going on, Bob. Why the F would the Dems be pushing this now? It is so bizarre.
Yeah, because that would mean that we can just do up and down votes on all the lunacy that the right wing passes in the House. And
I mean, that's what it's easy for us to sort of conclude. You know, I can't look at it any other way. It's like, oh, wait a minute. You did nothing about it while you could never get anything done while you had all three branches. Now that you've lost a huge portion of your power, you want to make it easier for the new powers? I mean,
because they're going to love that in 12.
Oh, my God. It's just, it's incredible. It's incredible.
But I guess there was some discussion today I saw somewhere that Steny Hoyer, of all people, has said that there will be a vote in the House on extending the tax breaks for the middle class and let the and let the rich go flap in the breeze. Which, if they're going to do anything during a lame duck, that's what you do.
Well, yeah, is that? I mean, I kind of saw that too, but I was like, oh, what's the catch?
Well, that's what I think. That's what I always think.
And because I'm still, you know, trying to figure out what sort of little game they was playing with this last vote for the extension. You know, that they decided it was going to go 2/3 on. You know, and what are they going to do about these people? You know, they're trying to say, I mean, I heard Dennis Kucinich today talking about, well, there's no way that they're going to not deal with the extension and they'll have something by the end of the year, but that's, I don't know, that's not very comforting either. I wonder.
It's a matter, with this crowd, it's a matter of waiting for the other shoe to drop, isn't it?
But those people who getting cut off, they don't. You know, just being sort of...
Yeah, fresh out of shoes.
These fodder for their little political...
And they've got till November 30th to get it done, right?
Well, for... I think it's in tiers. I think you have 1.5 million, and then it just sort of increases every week. I think that's how it works.
Yeah, and 10 days. 10 days. And what? They're not going to work Thanksgiving. They're not going to work the day after. They're not going to work Monday. They're not going to work the Monday after Thanksgiving. So, tops, what, Tuesday, Wednesday? When do they knock off?
Yeah, and then meanwhile, you know, mortgages, no, you can't call your bill collectors and say, oh, well, you know, can you hold on for the Senate?
Can you hold out till the Congress does it? Because, frankly, among other things, the bill collectors would say, hey, are you kidding? The Congress? No. Wait? Action? Sorry?
No, exactly. But anyway, and this, so, well, if they do that tax thing like that, that would be... really novel. I mean, I will have to eat a hat or something if that goes down.
Well, it's their only hope because they will be eaten alive if the whole thing because if taxes do go up in January 1, they'll be eaten alive for it. And the only way they can deal with it is make the Republicans speak out against giving middle-class people a tax break. But the thing that sort of tortures that whole process, though, Sandra, is that, the right-wing message machine is all geared up to say, well, it's just not fair. And you know, the little Becker heads and the O'Reilly heads and stuff, well, the rich deserve the same, just because they're rich doesn't mean we can be unfair to them.
Well,
I mean, you can hear it already, can't you?
I know, especially in light of the weakness in the White House, because, you know, I'm sorry, President Obama gets to get on any show he wants to. He can go on The View and talk about what should be going on with these taxes, but he doesn't seem to.
And yet the only one who's actually messaging on it, did you see, and I assume everybody else has too, Alan Grayson's analogy today?
Oh, yeah, no, that shit was, yeah. Hilarious.
We're talking about giving a tax break to the rich that will allow them to buy a brand new Mercedes E-Class every year for the next 10 years.
Yeah, no. But that's not the thing. It's, Obama needs to be, he needs to stop deferring to the Congress, first of all. I don't get it.
Yeah, in other words, use the bully pulpit and actually, what's the word we're looking for here, Sandra? Lead?
Oh, my God. It's just, you know, because who's going to get... I mean, if the Democrats think that extending this for any amount of time is going to help their position, they are dreaming. All it's going to do is allow the Republicans to get even more seats and get the White House in 2012 and make it permanent.
That seems so. It seems so obvious to me.
You know, it's just stunning, and this is like their last stand. The worst that can happen to them is what? They show that the Republicans are keeping middle class people from getting a tax cut in order to have the rich get one. Oh, that's really bad for the Democrats to show that. I mean, what's going on?
I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I'm just really starting to wonder. You know, really. And that whole thing that you brought up with Obama and that children's book, yeah, I was rolling on that. I'm thinking, well, I'm quite a big fan of Sitting Bull.
Yeah, me too.
For that reason. I'm sorry. You know, I think about Native Americans. I do go back to that. I say at least they took out some of them crackers. Sorry. You know, you got
no, I understand.
I'm being kind of facetious, but I'm like, yeah, they crucifying Obama over that selection, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, President praises Indian who killed a U.S. general. And, of course, you know, you got to remember you're dealing with Fox viewers here who are probably thinking that the U.S. general was like Norman Schwarzkopf or something. I know. Tough, isn't it?
It is. It's just, you know, wow. Yeah. Anyway, listen, I gotta go deal with my nieces, so have a good weekend.
Well, you have a good weekend with them, Sandra. You take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Cassie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How, more importantly, are you?
I'm good. We settled in with college and the whole...
You Ivy Leaguer
thing.
You.
What?
You Ivy Leaguer you.
Yeah, well. But it's taken a while to get settled and to find what I have time for and figure out, like, study schedules and when I should be doing, you know, like, just getting the whole thing together.
Well, just remember that once you've made it past the freshman year, the grade inflation kicks in. And that'll be cool for you. Yeah.
Well, I'm done with midterms.
Oh, wow. We are there, aren't we?
Yeah. I'm done with midterms. I have, 2 days of class next week. And then I am, going to Philly with, a friend who lives there. And I'm going to be there for Thanksgiving.
Oh, listen to you. You've already picked up the language. I'm going to Philly.
Yeah. Anyway. So I haven't gone since the summer, I think.
I'm sorry?
But I do listen.
Well, I understand it's a rather busy time, so we haven't heard from you a lot lately, but I figure that's a function of you being rather tied up in a pretty intense part of a new part of your life. But your latest post over there, or the post, My Generation and the Retirement Debate, that was some pretty profound stuff you wrote, Cassie.
Thank you. It actually grew out of email that I sent you. I sent you like a one-line email.
Yeah, in fact, I expanded upon it a little bit, and we had some conversation out of it.
Yeah, but we can't imagine what retirement is because we can't even imagine having a career.
You can't imagine being a senior someday.
Being what?
A senior. You know, like last year of college. That's.
Well, I have a little imagination.
That's a sixth of your present life away from now.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so I wrote that, and I'm in the middle of another post. But I'm not sure if I'm crazy. Well, I know I'm crazy, but it's a different take on the whole TSA thing.
Really?
Yeah. So, I was thinking about not just going through the lines, which I, like, really don't want to do, and I'm very glad that I'm not traveling right now. What it's like to be with somebody who is getting pat down and groped and all of that. And how embarrassing it would be, both if that was happening to you and also if it was happening to the person you're with. I would be embarrassed about it. I would think that it's, like, really uncomfortable. And there are so many people who I can't imagine, like, having to go through that. And when they do the picture part, can see that just the TSA agent, or is it like when they do your luggage and everybody can see what's inside your suitcase?
No, supposedly only the TSA person can see it.
Okay.
But the thing is, those confounded things are dangerous.
Right.
I mean, they're X-rays. They're based on radiating your body. And if you're a frequent flyer, it can't be good for you in the long term.
What if you're pregnant? Or what if you have cancer? Or what if, like, you're...
Doesn't matter.
...person is wearing a diaper? Or there was a lady who they made her take out her false breast.
Yeah, I was just looking at that story. 32 years on the job as a flight attendant. And a breast cancer survivor, a North Carolina woman. Airport screeners made her remove her prosthetic breast because they were afraid it might be a bomb.
That's... Okay, so if you're a terrorist, you're going to find a woman who's missing a breast?
Oh, those terrorists are crafty, Cassie.
Okay, so, all right. Well, see, this is the other place that I went to. So, like, right now they're saying that they're not going to scan children, they're not going to do the groping thing, except that they have. But they say they're not going to, right? That's, like, against the rules. But if a person was willing to find a cancer survivor and put the put the explosive in her breast, wouldn't they be willing to put it inside a little girl's skirt? I mean, how can they say that they're not going to do kids? I mean, how long can that last?
Well, the most frustrating part of all of this, Cassie, is that as our buddy Joe Ray, the Foxhole Atheist, noted early in the program, all of it's entirely unnecessary. There have been non-contact the searches going on in Iraq for years now.
Well, that's probably because they respect, I mean, the women there cover up, right? Like, they respect that people's bodies are private.
Well, it's also more effective.
Yeah, well, there's that. But that, we're Americans. We do what makes money for corporations. We don't do what's effective.
Well, that's true, and remember, the whole body scanner thing is a scam that was begun by Skeletor, Michael Chertoff, who went around the country hustling these things, and it turned out that he was working for the company at the time he was hustling them.
Because he was a Republican. Anyway, but, okay, so I took it a step further in my head, and tell me if I'm crazy, but my mother was a victim of sexual assault, and when I was little, if anybody, like, even touched my mom on the shoulder, she would sort of, like, bow and kind of cringe. Because I don't think she ever got over it. So... I was always afraid that people would hurt my mom. But what if I was at an airport? What if a kid was at an airport and had to see them do this to their mom? And it was like my mom who, you know, like would freak out and, you know, I think my mom would just like would probably cry and scream if this happened. And, you know, like I don't know, but all right, here's what I wrote so far, because I'm not talking well. I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
When I was in elementary school, we had counselors and visiting speakers from Safe Place who talked to us about molestation and about keeping our private parts private and what to do if a stranger or someone we knew wanted to touch the areas that were hidden by a bathing suit. They told us there were times when a doctor might need to touch us for a medical exam and that we'd always have a parent in the room. They always told us who to call and when to request help if anyone else touched our privates without our permission. Okay, and then a little bit about the TSA and stuff. And okay, but what if it's even only adults? What message do the invasive pat-downs send to children? If a little boy or a little girl sees the TSA agent touch their parents' private parts and sees their parents blush and grimace, but they don't see their parents yell out, ask for help, or call the police, then what is the message to the children? If the child is a victim of molestation in the future, won't this make them less likely to object or to seek help?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think you've identified one of the more devastating aspects of this problem, because the message it sends is that you know, to a child is that it's okay for them to touch you there as long as they've got a uniform on. And you know what?
Yes.
There are lots of uniforms for sale in a lot of costume shops.
Yeah.
You know, remember John Wayne Gacy was a clown at children's parties.
I'm not sure who that is.
He was a molester and mass murderer of children.
Okay. Because I don't know. I mean, I think that to have, I think it can damage our whole society to have stuff like this go on.
Oh, I think you're absolutely, yes.
I think it, you know, it's bad enough that, and I don't believe in censorship, but it's bad enough that we have TV shows that either glorify sex or have, you know, the law and order,
mm-hmm.
has the
special victims unit.
Yes. I mean, I think that, like, all of that makes us I don't know. I think it's not good to have it on. I think it's not good for us to see all the time. But I think that seeing the people we love have to go through and be pat down to look for bombs that aren't even there is, I think it's just so wrong.
Well, I'm gonna say something here, and it's an extension of something that I have argued before. I guess it was Wednesday night. I reiterated my everybody go to the airport in a Speedo argument. But realistically, and I wouldn't be surprised if this doesn't start happening here and there, and it would be difficult to get it going. Full steam because of people's modesty issues.
Is this the going in a bikini?
No, frankly, I expect that sooner or later, somebody is going to strip naked and say, you know, here I am, find the bomb. And that's the only way, and not even find the bomb, just, you know, here I am. You don't need your scanner and you don't need to touch anything. There's not, you know, look. And yeah, I don't even know, in a proto-fascist state, I don't even know if a statement like that would be sufficient to shame the authorities into recognizing how stupid this policy is. When Joe Biden is showing up and arguing that it's we're not crazy about it, but it's something we got to do to protect from the terrorists. It's entrenched, isn't it, Cassie?
Yeah. I just think that it can be really harmful, and I think that I heard that everybody's gonna go on Wednesday, and there's a whole bunch of people who are gonna say that they refuse to do it.
Well, they just ain't flying then.
And didn't that one guy, where was?
Because the thing is, the airline is under no obligation to refund the ticket price, so the airline actually comes out ahead if everybody refuses and then is not allowed to board. Because then the empty plane flies away, goes to wherever it's going, and it's a lot cheaper because they use less fuel. So it won't hurt the airline industry. It'll only hurt the airline industry if people stop buying tickets.
Yeah.
But we don't have, like, for instance, we don't have the rail infrastructure for people to make that choice and say, well, you know, I'm going to take the train instead of the plane. I suspect that the powers that be know that they have the American traveling public over a barrel.
What if people start, like, freaking out?
People have started freaking out.
But, like, I saw my mom freak out because somebody put their hand on her shoulder once. Like, you know, but my mom had mental illnesses and, you know, I mean, we know that there were a lot of other things going on. But what if people start, like, having panic attacks in the middle of the airport? Has that happened yet?
I'm sure, well, I mean, yeah. And it's... And the answer is, they don't care. You know, if you have a panic attack and a breakdown in the middle of an airport, the first thing they're going to think is that you're nervous because you're a bomber.
And then they take you in.
And then they do it to you anyway. Remember, this kind of dovetails, Cassie, with the story from last week about the people who have been harassed and tormented for simply setting up a website to get donations for the legal defense for Bradley Manning, you know, the guy who turned over all the WikiLeaks documents.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The FBI is tormenting people for having anything to do with trying to mount a legal defense for Bradley Manning. They've been interrogated at length. They've had all their electronic equipment stolen from them and not returned.
There's something really wrong with this country. And Barack Obama was supposed to fix it, and it's just getting worse.
Well, we deluded ourselves into thinking Barack Obama would fix it. But he engages policy, Cassie, from a position of fear. Everything this White House does, it does having first contemplated, how do we keep the right wing from being mean to us?
Well, you can't stop the right wing from being mean.
Precisely. You know that. I know that. The White House doesn't.
They have to stand up. They have to say, well, I don't care if they're going to be mean. We'll do the right thing anyway. I mean, that's what Barack Obama should be teaching his children in a book.
Yeah, instead of writing his children a book, maybe he would have been better off giving them a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah. I love that book.
Well, it has extreme value. And you know it's good because the right wing despises it.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they hate it. If you just look up right wing or To Kill a Mockingbird right wing, you can find all sorts of excoriations of it. Now, I think Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner is correct, Cassie. He says, boycott flying and it'll stop tomorrow. Money talks. That much is true. But we can't...
But you have to buy tickets how many weeks in advance because everybody already bought their Christmas tickets.
Right, and it's all... And again, I reiterate, it is all non-refundable.
Yeah. I mean, the people who I know that are flying, they've all bought their tickets.
Rick notes that he has stopped flying. And yeah, Marty, who's listening and said send you his best, Marty said, Cassie has just referred to National Opt-Out Day. And what that entails is people refusing to go through the body scanner and instead make the TSA or the private contractor feel you up and then complain. The idea is to slow down the security process to a crawl and force major delays in the system. Flights with no passengers will be canceled. The planes won't fly and perhaps the people won't be paid. See, I don't know that that's necessarily so, because a flight with no passengers still has to go somewhere and pick up more.
But what will happen is that everybody who says that, they'll have their friends holding a camera, and whatever the TSA does wrong, there'll be like 1,000 of them on YouTube.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of these stories already out there. And the only thing the Obama administration knows to do is to hunker down. That's why Joe Biden was delivering the message he was delivering. Doesn't matter how much you complain, I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, how is it that it's us and Ron Paul who's complaining about this? I mean, where's the middle? Like, what's the last thing that...
Well, first of all, Cassie, I don't believe there is any such thing as a middle. I understand the danger of the word, but I've seen no evidence to suggest that there really is a middle. There are Republicans who are ashamed to say they're Republicans, and there are Democrats who are Democrats because they kind of have to be, but would just as soon be Republicans. And then there are the hard right wing and us little, you know, centrists that they call communists.
Right, but there's also...
We are the center, in other words.
...don't vote and who aren't involved and who don't follow the news, and all going to be on airplanes next Wednesday.
And until it is their ox getting gored, they don't care.
But they will. This is going to get people upset. So I want to switch topics for a second.
Okay.
Do you know who... Melissa Harris Lacewell. Melissa, she's now Melissa Harris Perry.
Don't think so.
She is a professor at Princeton. She's on MSNBC all the time. She's like incredibly cool. She's definitely like one of us. And she talks a lot about civil liberties and civil rights. A lot about African American rights, and I mean she's absolutely amazing. And I met her the other night, and I'm gonna be taking a course with her next semester.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So have you already picked next semester's classes?
I have put in my requests, but her class is one that is set sophomores and above, or with permission from instructor. And she already signed off on my permission.
Awesome. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. I actually knew her. I mean, I knew her, like, online first. And I've sent her blog posts before. And she, anyway, So I'm like, I'm really excited about that. But I don't know what else I've got for next semester yet.
Have you found, are there classes you've had this semester, obviously, that you prefer over others? Are you getting a sense for where you want to go with it all?
No. Not yet.
You got to be liking some part of it.
Yeah, but I still want to, I want to study everything.
College, yeah, Cassie at college is Cassie in the candy store.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, listen, I gotta go. I'm gonna, be meeting some friends to go see Harry Potter. I just wanted to call in then.
Well, I really appreciate it. And I'm glad you did.
All right.
And yeah. Everything. I'm glad that things appear to be working out.
It's I think it took a while to kind of get stuff settled, but everything's going well.
Cool. Well, Cassie, you take care.
All right. Bye bye.
Keep studying. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, sir.
Bye now.
You too.
Cassie calling from college, Princeton to be precise. Very proud. Very proud we all are of her endeavors and exploits. And moving through the lines here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
How are you?
I'm well. Among other things, all the technology's working, so...
Well, guess what?
What's that?
Well, I think Rush Limbaugh came up here and sat on something at the head end for suddenly because everything's been out over here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just so much fun. TV goes out, internet goes out, power goes out. So it's just been...
Bad weather?
No, I think Rush Limbaugh came up here and sat on something.
Or ate it.
No, he just sat on it. He wouldn't want to eat it. You know, some of the stuff you've been going over, what I've been able to catch. Number one, about this Medal of Honor thing. I have two words for those people. Fuck them.
I cannot think of a more appropriate usage of the word, Jim.
You know, who in the hell do they think they are? That really just infuriated me. And then for Obama to give Bush the Medal of Freedom.
Just dumbfounding, isn't it?
Yeah. And for them to get pissed off because Sitting Bull got favorable recognition in that book for his children.
But really, Jim, they're going to lose their minds when they find out Helen Keller was a socialist.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know, these people don't believe, you know. For example, if you look at George Armstrong Custer, one of his favorite costumes for Halloween was to dress as the devil.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. And his soldiers behaved like that because they actually went into Indian villages and they would kill the squaws, cut off their breasts, and dry the breasts out, and use them for pouches.
Dear God.
That's one of the reasons Sitting Bull was so upset with those people and decided that he was going to deal with them once and for all. Can't blame him.
And, you know, he really was at the bottom of the barrel of his West Point class and apparently behaved true to type for all of his days.
Well, I think he spent more time with his hair than anything else. Of course, we saw what happened to his hair. I think it wound up in somebody's wigwam. I don't know. No pun intended there.
He thought highly of himself. But the thing was, you know, the Little Bighorn was going to catapult him to the presidency, Jim.
Say what, sir?
The Battle of the Little Bighorn was going to, that was going to be his catapult to the presidency.
Well, not in this world, it didn't. And I'm afraid it didn't. No, not at all. But, I mean, all this stuff is just, I just don't understand it. I mean, this unemployment thing, they're not going to extend those benefits to those people. What are they going to do?
Jim, I'm not trying to be flip. They don't care. Especially the right wing. They do not care.
Well, they just don't give a shit. They just don't care. You're right. They don't care. But in so doing, they are hoisting themselves on their own petard. Now, this is going to come back home, like I told you earlier in my email. It really is.
And I understand that, Jim, but by the same token, if it comes back and bites them, what happens in the interim? You know, that's my problem, or my concern, is that even if there is a political price to be paid, the price is being paid in terms of human suffering. The political price can never do anything but pale in comparison.
Well, what they're going to do, I think probably, maybe, and I talked to D.C. today, and they're going to make a deal, extend the tax cuts to the rich in exchange for extending unemployment benefits on a limited basis.
What a deal with the devil that is.
Well, that's just the way politics happens to be, my friend. Compromise. They realize they have the leverage and the power to do it and to force it into, you know, some type of deal with the devil, as you called it, really, I think.
I would far rather see them push the middle class tax cut through in this lame duck session and let the one foot...
You know, as far as time is concerned, how much time do they have before the new Congress is seated?
Well, I was looking at the calendar wondering that very same thing as we were talking about the unemployment drop-dead date of November 30th. Are they even working next week? Because if they aren't, then that gives them maybe 2 days to get it done. And then, God, how much actual time will they spend working in the run-up to Christmas?
Well, you know, this is the whole thing. And a lot of people have become so discontent with the lack of response of the Congress and the government, and plus the president kissing everybody's ass up there he possibly can, and it's not going to bring him any positive outcome. You know that. I know that. But why doesn't he?
You know, I think if you ever actually manage to answer that question dispositively, you will be miles ahead and hailed as practically an Aristotle.
Well, it's not, you know, I just don't understand. And you know what I'm driving at is it's driving the cause of fascism further and further and further. You know, I was just thinking about something, and I'm not going to be too long here because I know you have other people who want to be on the phone too. But, you know, fascism at one time had to have a very specific host in which it could breed. I mean, in Germany, Italy, Spain, in Japan. Well, that was back in the 1930s, 1940s, or 20s and 30s, okay? But, you know, the host for fascism is no longer limited. With the advent of the Internet, cable TV and things of this nature, and people like Rudolph Murdoch or Rupert Murdoch or whatever the hell his name is. I'm sorry I call my cat Rupert because my cat was named for Rupert Brooke, not Rupert Murdoch. That's for damn sure.
I suspected as much.
But, you know, nonetheless, fascism has a much easier way of containing and expanding behind its, you know, outside of its borders because all the other isms have failed. I mean, communism has failed. And when you had communism in the Soviet Union, it was nothing more than state fascism. That's exactly what it was under Lenin and Stalin. It was state fascism. That's all there is to it.
Well, I think, yeah, and I think there's a lot of validity in what you say, because I would argue that there has never been an actual manifestation of real communism, at least not the Marx and Engels kind.
No.
I mean, look at modern China. There's no, you can't, I think, I read a story, it was some months back, there is actually one Maoist city left in the entirety of China, where they run on communist principles, where everybody shares equally. China now, how can anybody with any intellectual honesty argue that China is a communist country?
It's state fascism. That's exactly what it is. And this stuff, through the conduits that we described, the internet, cable TV, and news and stuff all over the world, has begun to spread just like the AIDS virus.
Well, you know, I think, Jim, we did ourselves, and you, I believe you and I have talked about this in the past, historically, we did ourselves a great disservice, because at the end of the Second World War, we declared fascism dead, with the exception of Spain, and we made certain assumptions about what fascism looks like and sounds like and acts like when it comes. There were people of prescience who argued that, for instance, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in a cross and wrapped in a flag and carrying a Bible. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, because you always leverage the faith of the people in fascism, among other things. But we made this mistake of thinking that fascism had to look like Italian fascism, had to look like German fascism.
Oh no, it's a shapeshifter.
Sure it is, but get anybody to try to get anybody to understand that. If you in discussion refer to America displaying fascist tendencies, that will immediately get your argument dismissed. Now Glenn Beck can sit there and call Gumby and Mr. Bill communists and everybody else under the sun communists, and the right wing just eats it up. But if you try to engage in a debate with that side and talk to them about fascism and point out examples of creeping, if not outright spreading, fascism in this country, the minute you say fascism, you lose them. Because the only possible fascist is that Islamo-Communo-fascist Barack Obama, the Kenyan from Muslim, the Muslim from Kenya.
Well, you know, if you examine the history of fascism in this country, particularly in the 1930s, for example, you had that guy named Fritz Kuhn, who was in charge of the German Bund. Remember him?
Yeah. And there was a guy named Scalia in New York.
Yeah, and they even had camps, Camp Nordland and Camp Siegfried, where they would send their kids to basically have the same type of model that the Germans were using in the 30s. I mean, fascism is deeply rooted, or the propensity for it to come to fore in this country is deeply rooted in our past.
Well, couldn't you make the fair argument that Henry Ford was a fascist?
Oh, he was. Yeah, well, the only thing he ever did was he had sense enough to pay his workers a decent wage so they could buy his cars. But he was a notorious anti-Semite, and because he was a teetotaler and non-smoker, of course, Hitler had his picture up in German bookshops before the war as being an example of the type of American there should be. You know, it goes way back, and it's really frightening to me, and I see it coming. I really do.
I do too, Jim. And the question, I think, and I welcome any answer you have, is how do you educate the American populace on the threat of fascism and not lose them in the use of the word?
Bob, you can lead people to water, but you can't make them think. And as long as they have people like Glenn Beck and some of these other idiots that they're listening to, Rush Limbaugh and people like that, I don't think they're going to really see it. And I don't think they really want to see it, to tell you the truth.
Well, and again, that's something that bears remembering about fascism. If you just keep your head down and you don't make waves, and you go to work, and you come home, and you eat your dinner, and you watch Dancing with the Stars. Life for the plebs under fascism can be fairly comfortable until they come for you.
Yeah, you're right there. Absolutely. And, of course, we simply don't learn from our mistakes and learn from the malignancies of these of a doctrine like this. And with the present administration in Washington, it seems like they're just falling right into it. And I don't know, who are Obama's advisors? I mean, are they under the pay of the Republican National Committee or what? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, they're corporatists. I mean, they are the same corporate stripe as many of their opponents.
And you know, I think this is my personal feelings about Barack Obama. He is an elitist in many ways, and is above this. And he is trying to rise above the whole thing, when the real strategy should be not to rise above it, but to, you know, to have some balls. I mean, what's this thing that they're talking about, you know, they need to borrow one from Hillary Clinton? Hell, Hillary Clinton has more balls than he ever thought about having.
You know, Jim, I know it sounds shallow on my part, but I have met and shaken the man's hand. And you ever shake hands with somebody and it's like grabbing a dead fish?
Yeah, I have.
He's got that kind of handshake where there's just no life in it. Yeah, I'm not one of those guys who runs around and, you know, you shake hands with somebody and it's a death grip contest. But I was always told to, you know, have a firm handshake. And when you shake Barack Obama's hand, it's like you're holding something that is just...
Yeah, I know, and it's the worst thing is having somebody try to scratch your palm when you shake their hand, you know what?
Live
it. It just is, and you know, I've watched this all faith in this man. I really have. I you know, he says one thing and then he goes around and does something else entirely stupid. I mean, instead of bothering to write children's books, he ought to be doing his damn job. I mean, you know, I admire his position on Sitting Bull and Helen Keller and people like that, but, I mean, he has more important things to do than to try to do stuff like this, in my opinion. Maybe I'm all wrong here. I don't know.
No, I think you're just as frustrated as many of us are, Jim. You and I and the rest of the Horn family, we have a sense that this is a time that calls for bold leadership, and we ain't getting it.
Well, you know, too many people are just not paying attention to what's happening. They're watching Dancing with the Stars. They're all involved with people like Michael Vick and all this kind of stuff, and some other NFL player who's getting a divorce and this, that, and the other. And you know, it's just the emphasis is on the wrong syllable.
And of course, that plays into, well, you know, we all have our creature comforts, creature pleasures.
Yeah.
Whether it's dancing, you know, we keep talking about Dancing with the Stars. You know, Jesus Christ, the tea baggers have succeeded in corrupting that vote, if you can imagine, in a popularity contest, for God's sakes, and they're doing it because it drives the liberals crazy.
True, it does. And ending this conversation in tribute to Sandra and people like that who are sports enthusiasts. Oh, yeah, I'm all with you, because when it comes to playing with balls, I'm all over it.
Score! Jim, have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye now. It's your buddy Jim. And a couple of, I'm going back to the phones post-haste, but a couple of emails rolled in that deserve a little bit of attention. Our buddy Andy wrote in from California. He said, I would agree with Sandra regarding Buffett, but I think Soros has a better track record. Warren Buffett has a great PR machine. It's on overdrive. He was a strong backer of Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. You got to say it that way in California. When I saw Buffett on the same stage with Milton Friedman, ew, I lost all faith. Mr. Buffett was against the regulation of derivatives. in regards to putting up collateral to back the loss exposure, called margin, because his General Re, his company, had a large exposure. Think about Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska, who put him there, who backs him. Who put him in there? Who backs him? It's Warren Buffett. Ben Nelson almost always votes with Republicans. Buffett is a strong backer of Bill Gates, another criminal who made his money by promoting a monopolistic policies. Buffett talks a good game about his class winning the class war and how he pays less of a percentage of income taxes than his secretaries, but there's no there there. On the other hand, in Eastern Europe, George Soros did put a lot of money into democratic nonprofit organizations to promote fair elections in Eastern Europe, i.e. good democratic processes. I don't know of him doing anything to pull money out of their economies with his investments, if any. I spent a lot of time in the Czech Republic and Slovakia, and there he is well regarded. And he says, happy Thanksgiving to you all. Similar coming in from Stuart Langner. He references Soros.org. He says, I listen to your show from time to time, very good, and I've heard Sandra from time to time, very good. I would like to correct something she said on November 19th. I'm familiar with George Soros in Eastern Europe. He set up a foundation called Open Society while the Soviet Union was still in charge. He set up country foundations with locals. It was non-profit. They were very instrumental in helping to open up these countries. He set up a university in Hungary and the Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia at the time. He was hated by the people in charge of these countries in the same way he is hated by the right wing here. Why? Because he believes in the importance of open societies, of access to information. It was a concept he learned when he was a philosophy student of Karl Popper. He believes openness is important for feedback mechanisms, and feedback mechanisms help societies and markets to adapt and correct, and setting up his foundations in these countries was his attempt to do this. He felt the same about what was going on in here in the last decade, and so he funded organizations here to help open up society. He has an Open Society Institute here in the U.S. As I recall, he was careful not to invest in these Eastern European countries when he was conducting these activities. In fact, he avoided investing in Eastern Europe for a while after the wall fell, and there was a lot of privatization going on. He did eventually invest in Russia and got burnt, but he waited a long time to do it because of concern about conflicts and the fact that he was viewed with such suspicion there. Sandra made a comment about Soros going to places where people suffer, and he goes there to make money. And she pointed out Poland and Eastern Europe by implication. I think she even said to look to countries that are suffering, and he's there to make money. Unless she has some other information, I don't think she was right on this, and I wanted to let you know because you aired it or erred it. Soros has exposed himself a lot to a lot of personal attacks because he opposes regimes when it isn't a popular thing to do and when they are in power. His Open Society foundations are admirable. I could not let that comment go without mention to you. And I understand that, and I appreciate it, Stuart. I know Sandra is a fair person and very knowledgeable. I think she may not have been aware of his full activities in Eastern Europe or elsewhere. Again, she may know some things I don't. But I think even if she does, his involvement in Eastern Europe was not simply exploiting for money, and the accusation is the kind of attack he endures from the right for opposing the administration's war in Iraq and in places like Malaysia where they had a financial meltdown. Oops, I screwed up. I'm sorry. I apologize for using the name. I usually don't do that. I was just trying to get this done in a hurry. My bad. But there's no misunderstanding. No. Don't worry about it. We're all friends here. And I appreciate. I do understand your point, and I appreciate it. I have real misgivings anytime I hear the right so viciously attacking someone. And so my sympathies have largely lain on the side of George Soros. But I need to know more. I do need to, because if there's any truth to the currency manipulation stuff, I would like to know. I have no doubts whatsoever about the qualities of his philanthropic foundations, and I know more about that. I do wish that maybe someone could get his ear, because I know that he does have what would you call them, media justice organizations that give money for that kind of thing. And he does, if I understood David in Tennessee a few nights ago, he does have a much greater ability to put something up like a direct opponent to Fox. And maybe the reason that Glenn Beck has attacked so vociferously is to discourage him from that idea. But again, the problem arises in the fact that our side actually wants our thing, unless we're just giving money away, our side wants our business enterprises to make money. The right-wing ideologues, they don't care. If you look at that that segment from last night's Daily Show with where Jon Stewart has all the billionaires and all of their organizations connected, it really is vast. And the stuff that Jon Stewart was putting out there wasn't made up. It's real. The right wing really is serious about funding the infrastructure to utterly destroy everything that is good for working class people in this country. And that's almost, their success has almost been complete. And fascism, such as they support, and please understand, when we're talking about Richard Mellon Scaife, and we're talking about the Koch brothers, and God, the list is, when we are talking about the same kind of people who were backers of the rise of fascism in the early 20th century. Please, don't think that there has to be spiffy uniforms and goose-stepping involved, because there doesn't. You know, maybe it's time that we went back to that famous list that Malloy used to share and hammer on that a little bit. You know, the 14 defining characteristics of fascism. Just put 14 characteristics of fascism into the Google, and you'll have it there. I'm not going to read it right now. You can read it for yourself. But check off box by box and see if it isn't all already in place. And frankly, the hissy that people are having, and by using the word hissy, I don't mean to denigrate, but the outcry that people are having over the TSA gropings, well, what they're objecting to is a fascist practice. God Almighty! Now the challenge is to get people to understand. Understand that sometimes you have to call a beast by its name. It wasn't good when the Germans, the Japanese, the Spanish, or the Italians did it. And it ain't good now that it's happening to us. And this is not me saying that I haven't gone all right wing on you. I'm not saying that Barack Obama is one. But this government is in many ways, especially under the tender mercies of the right wing, fast devolving into the very essence of fascism. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Cossack. What's up, brother?
Ah, God. A couple of points I want to touch on with you. If we can flip the page back a little bit to the thing about America's wars abroad coming home.
Yeah.
Well, it actually started with America's, with America's policing techniques at home from the drug war.
Absolutely, Cossack. I remember when Abu Ghraib broke.
Uh-huh.
And some of us were saying back then, why are we surprised at this? You know, the right wing was, that's all right, and Rush Limbaugh, my friends, it's nothing more than a fraternity prank. But a lot of us looked at it and said, you know, look, these prison guards at Abu Ghraib who did all this were prison guards back at home. This happens all the time in the American prison industrial complex.
Exactly. And, you know, the techniques that we're using in both Iraq and Afghanistan, these dynamic entries, well, that's basically what we've learned with the no-knock warrants. And that's how that octogenarian in Atlanta got murdered.
Right.
You know, a no-knock warrant on the wrong address in the middle of the night, and she shot back. Well, for crying out loud, I would too.
Well, yeah, and the right wing has said, you know, you've got to arm yourself in case you've got a home invader. So there was a home invader, and she was armed, and she shot back, and they blew her to hell.
Yep. And that's exactly the same kind of thing that is going on exactly the same tactics that we're using in this country. We'll blow in the door, you know, people yelling and screaming in a foreign language, waving around weapons, and, you know, everybody cowering in fear, people getting shot, quote, by accident. It happens here all the time, Bob.
Sure it does.
I mean,
remember the little boy that was killed in the juvenile detention camp not far from where you live?
Oh yeah, in this city, within the city limits. Yes. Yeah, people are saying, well, they didn't really kill him. They just crammed those ammonia ampules up his nose. And what did he die from? You know?
Yeah. Suffocation.
Yeah. You try breathing through those ammonia ampules.
And of course, the thugs who did it walked.
Sure. Nobody was guilty. Not the alleged nurse that was sitting there saying, "Come on, quit faking."
I know.
And there's another interesting thing: the Republicans' START treaty, and you should see what the Russian reaction is. They're not real goddamn amused about this.
Nor should they be.
Yeah.
this is a sliv. This is a shiv being slipped to them of monumental proportions.
I mean, some of these nut jobs are still playing Cold War. And not a good idea.
No, because the weapons are still very much out there and very much usable.
Oh, yeah. And, well, not only that, but we need their help on a lot of different things, and they're not in a mood to be real helpful right now.
You know, I love this quote from Senator Richard Lugar, an Indiana Republican. On the START treaty, he said, "Please do your duty for your country. We do not have verification of the Russian nuclear posture right now. We're not going to have it until we sign the START treaty. We're not going to be able to get rid of further missiles and warheads aimed at us. I stated candidly to my colleagues, one of these warheads could demolish my city of Indianapolis, obliterate it. Now, Americans may have forgotten that. I've not forgotten it, and I think that most people who are concentrating on the START treaty want us to move ahead, to move down the ladder of the number of weapons aimed at us. But that line, Cossack, please do your duty for your country."
Yeah.
It will be a cold day in hell when John Kyle does anything for his country. Because John Kyle does not give a good goddamn about the United States of America. John Kyle cares about John Kyle, and John Kyle cares about the Republican Party, and that is the end of any analysis. So please do your duty for your country falls on deaf ears where John Kyle is concerned, and probably most of the Republican Party.
Unbelievable. And these are the people who are the, quote, uber patriots. My butt. Oh, another thing about honor and women and how women can't have honor.
Yeah.
Has this idiot ever heard of Molly Pitcher? Does he have any idea?
No, these guys exist in a vacuum of their a vacuum populated only by their own bigotry.
But I mean, this is your own history, for God's sakes. I mean, real history, like real life. Like this real...
This guy believe... No, stop. This guy comes from the American Family Association, Cossack. He believes in crackers that turn into meat. He believes in... He's got a zombie god. He's a member of a death cult. He hates gay people. You know, another one of these right-wing freaks and fellow travelers of the likes of Brian Fisher jackass... tried to fearmonger his way, or has done some fearmongering over Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which, by the way, may not go away like we thought it would, because I was informed during the program that a judge has held up Lisa Murkowski's return to Washington until Joe Miller's voter fraud suit has been resolved. Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to find it here because it's so valuable. Where'd it go? Well, darn. You know, I mean, there's Mitch McConnell. Opposing start. You know, they would burn this country to the ground just to get their own filthy way. But no, I think it was Tony Perkins, you know, Norman, who said that, if we repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we're going to have to bring back the draft.
Why?
It got me.
I mean, with the economy the way it is, we've got forced labor in the military as it is. You know, it's an economic draft.
He said, Barack Obama is opposed to the draft as a matter of principle, to be sure, but the president's drive to repeal the ban on open homosexuality in the military could have this unintended consequence. It could bring back the draft. And, you know, not really much there in the way of how. This is just more fulminations coming from the fevered, thin gray settlings between his ears that pass for brains.
Jesus Christ. And, you know... Earlier, you know, you were talking about touching people's junk, and I mean, I've already gone through enhanced searches. You know, it's freaking ridiculous. You know, and as you were saying, I don't know if you saw the article, but. Some of these backscatter machines have enough resolution power to pick up people 6 feet away from the machine. Like they had a double image, the guy who was in the actual machine and the guy who was standing 6 feet away from him.
Yeah, that's not a nice level of radiation.
No, it isn't. Not even once. Much less if you're anything like a frequent flyer. And mark my words, you're going to see a tremendous increase in the corporate class of skin cancers because most of this radiation basically is affecting the skin. The largest organ you have, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people don't really think about it that way, but they ought to. And especially when you're sitting there and... submitting yourself. This is the freaking shoe x-ray of the 50s. Remember that?
That's a little before my time, but yeah, I've read about it.
Yeah, you know, you stick your foot in this thing, and there you are. You can see your feet bones. Whee! And these things leaked radiation like nobody's business.
But, you know, you did. I think Cassie's points were very well taken, Cossack. You think, you know, what about a pregnant mother?
Yeah. Oh.
What about a lactating mother with a, you know.
Not a good idea. Not a good idea. And where's the cutoff? Are you going to do children? Or are you going to do babies? You know, where's the cutoff? And as you said, if they're going to insert bombs in women's prosthetic breasts, then, you know, why not, you know, wrap it up in a baby doll? Doesn't take a whole hell of a lot to depressurize plane.
Not very much at all.
I mean, you know, there is no thought going on here. Plus the fact that TSA has not stopped one single solitary terrorist, quote unquote.
Not a one.
You know, this is insane. This is sheer insanity.
I agree, Cossack.
How safe do you think you can be? You're not going to be safe as long as you're running around the world killing people and destroying their homes and their, you know, and their ancient way of life. They don't want you. They don't want the 20th century, really.
You know, I happened to be up late last night. I watched a fascinating thing on PBS about the rise of democracy in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there just because it was pretty even-handed. They pointed out that, you know, it's not always a good thing.
No.
That you know, it was the Athenian democracy that yielded that line in the Melian dialogue that great nations do what they wish, small nations do what they must.
Correct.
Woof. Hey, Cossack, I got to roll, but have yourself a great weekend.
You too, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. And, hey, welcome to the program.
Well, here we go.
Hey, David.
Yeah, I just wanted to briefly congratulate Tom Hartman on, I don't know if you heard about this, but he got a deal with Leonardo DiCaprio and Warner Brothers to do his JFK book.
Wow.
To film that. It will be out in 2013. So the dream is still alive, people, because Tom Hartman now has a movie deal with Warner Brothers. It's a done deal, and it should be done in 2013, probably around this time. In November, it should be out. So,
wow.
JFK. And the other thing I just wanted to mention briefly before I go is on the TSA thing. People should be really, really careful about this, Bob, because here's the thing about this. The thing about this is that they're, and I hope Cassie's still listening. The thing about this is that the TSA, when you're talking about this, and when the right wing is completely, is completely on the same level talking about this, they're thinking about it in a different way. And you know this as well as I do, Bob. They're thinking about it. They want to privatize the security system because government is inept. And
sure. And as Marty noted, to some extent, that's already happened.
Right.
Because
he
says at San Francisco, the screeners are all private contractors.
But Bob, this is the thing. Once they privatize the whole security system, you're not going to be groped, people. You're going to be raped. And with that, Bob, I'm just going to let people think about that for a minute, and you have a nice weekend.
And there will be no legal recourse whatsoever. You too, David. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. I'll try to work in a couple more calls. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
A couple of things real quickly. I'm really happy to hear Cassie's going to be taking a course with Melissa. It used to be Lacewell. I think she changed her name to Perry recently.
Yeah, Melissa Harris Perry.
Yeah, that's it. I saw her on Democracy Now! A couple months ago, and since, you know, Cassie made me curious to look up her other work, and I discovered that she blogs for The Nation, too.
Yeah, she's an amazing person.
There's a lot of interesting work going on at a lot of our universities. I mean, it's a shame to see the ways in which it's been privatized, and there's the huge influence of the military grants and research money that's available that sends people off in those directions. But nevertheless, there are people like her and We have some people at University of Colorado doing very interesting and important work on climate change, and at Colorado State University, my alma mater, there's some interesting fair trade projects going on, sustainable farming and other stuff. So also, Cassie mentioned the problem that she sees with all this violent messaging or imaging coming across the media, you know, from CSI to, you know, I saw there's a new show coming up called Human Target, and I think Dexter too. I have a lot of friends who enjoy that program, but still, I think if you take a look at it, it's hyper violent. And another issue with that is that there's a part of the violence that you're kind of, in a way, almost cheer for, because Dexter's doing it and he's doing it to bad guys. So it's this vigilante message that I think is very problematic and authoritarian,
disturbing even.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot going on in that show that troubles me, but again, it's this whole issue of violence in the media, and the argument's always been, well, does that turn people violent? And I think in some instances it does. In most, it doesn't, because it's so against our nature. I think that says something about human nature, is that we don't tend towards that, and we're horrified by it. But it was, what it does do, George Gerbner, the media analyst, says, is that it frightens people, and it gives people a view of the world that is very frightening and negative, and again, fear is a huge controller. You know, and that's not to say there aren't things that are scary about the world. I think all of us have experienced one or another, or multiple even, traumatic events. But generally speaking, and Gandhi spoke to this too, about how if we were that vicious all the time, we would have destroyed ourselves eons ago, but we aren't. And there's these huge, much bigger, more regular parts of our lives where there's caring and kindness and cooperation and reason and stuff like that. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that violent media. I think we're being manipulated. I think it's saying something about human nature, that, it, you know, we saw where the media can be racist, and it portrayed Black people and African Americans in a brutal, savage, stupid way, and totally unfair way. And I think there's this, similarly, there's this anti-human element of the media that we need to kind of call
out. I think that's profound, Preston, and I'm going to I'll be chewing on that as I go through the weekend. I really thank you for the
sure.
call, and I'm sorry we didn't have more time.
Not a problem.
But have yourself a wonderful weekend.
I really enjoyed listening to the others, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, take care. Bye now.
Bye.
And that's it. We are a minute away from the Rick Smith Show, live coming to you from Pennsylvania. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, you, who contribute to keep the program going. We are in past the middle of the month, nowhere near the halfway point of the fundraising goal, and bills due now. So if you can contribute, it is much appreciated. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our moderator there. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Our blogger, Texas Betsy. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Reverbo is our op-ed columnist at Cavalcade of Crazy. Matt Osborne is our Southeast correspondent. John Fox is our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer. And Ben Birch makes it all happen at WhiteRoseSociety.org. All the programs come to you through the hard work of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And the program is sponsored in part always by the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.